Cities, USA, and you're listening to Don't Break the Oath Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for listening. I just want to say a quick thank you there to Amber for the intro. We are looking for more intros or shout-outs, and also we're going to do a listener's ghost story episode soon. So if you've got a paranormal tale that you can share with us, you know, over Skype or just send it in to us, self-recorded, for all those things, particularly intros, you know, if you've got an intro, just quickly record it on your phone, whatever. Or again, we could do that over Skype if you really wanted to. So send it to dbtopodcast@gmail.com. We'll get on to it. Right, on to the paranormal news. Obviously, there's only two stories this week because we had Jerry on from the Hillbilly Horror Stories to help with this show today, and he recorded one of the news stories for us, and it was a bit long, so we had to leave one out. But essentially, all the other one was about Bigfoot sounds in Oregon. So, I mean, that's on the Paranormal Hangout if you want to go check that out on Facebook. Without further ado, let's get into the news.
Welcome to another installment of the Paranormal News, broadcasting to you from places unknown, bringing you the top three paranormal headlines of the week.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right, a mother of two who was enjoying a family day out at a museum was left shocked when she caught what she believes could be one of the clearest images of a ghost on camera she has ever seen. Apparently, a waving little girl. Louise Murphy had taken her 9-year-old son Owen for a day out at the Riverside Museum in Glasgow, Scotland, when she began taking photos in the museum's Victorian-themed street. Despite only Owen being near her when taking the picture, Mrs. Murphy was shocked to discover the haunting image of a little girl with long brown hair waving at the camera and wearing a floral dress. Most eerily, her entire face is blanked out apart from what appears to be the hollow shape of a black eye looking directly at the camera. The mother, who lives with her boyfriend Ian Stark, claims Owen was also left unsettled by the image, since he confirmed he was the only one present when she took the picture. Mrs. Murphy from Carlisle, Cumbria, said, "It definitely looks like a young girl to me."
One. I got a story. It's a place called Captain Tony's Saloon. It's in Key West, Florida. This place was built in the back in the 1850s, and it was the original first ice house, but it also secondary as the morgue there. And they're starting to have some sightings of a blue lady recently. And the story actually goes back that they used to have these all the time, but then it kind of stopped for a while, but now it's back up. And when you first walk in, what you notice is a large tree growing through the saloon. This tree used to be a hanging tree, and there were 17 executions done. 16 were pirates, and one was a woman. And the woman was because she supposedly killed her whole family. She was wearing a blue dress when she was hanged. Plus, she also turned blue, and that's kind of where they think the sightings are coming from. They also go back a little further. This place has all kinds of paranormal activity. 1865, there was a hurricane, and there was an unidentified body that just showed up outside the place. So they built a wall around it, threw some holy water in it. In the 1980s, they were doing some renovations on the saloon, and they included this wall now as part of the saloon. So they started tearing up some flooring and stuff, and they found some skeletal remains and a headstone of a woman named Elvira. And they still have the headstone there at the bar. So that probably would explain some of this.
Hello, everybody. Right. Today's show is going to be about Spring-Eel Jack and various other creatures of the night, which kind of go in that vein. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to put it, I guess.
Yeah.
And we are joined today by the legend, Jerry Pauley from the Hillbilly Horror Stories.
I appreciate it. I think legend might be a bit of a stretch, or a whole bunch of a stretch, but I'll take it.
Well, right, so he's got some cases. He's, you know, Spring-Eel Jack pops up in the States. So Jerry's going to get into a few of them as well as we go, but, you know, he's going to chip in as we go as well. So, right, we may as well start at the beginning. And this is not necessarily down in the annals as Spring Heel Jack, but it's maybe it was Spring Heel Jack before he got his name. And this is the case of the London Monster. Okay, and then the first report is in 1788. And most of the accounts tell of a fellow who attacks mostly rich females, you know, rich, beautiful women.
So it's women, we've got this women theme, haven't we?
Yeah, female this runs right through it.
Yeah, okay.
But he starts stayed, off by, generally, they describe him as being a large man, generally wearing a cloak, you know, all the things that go along with Spring Heel Jack. And he normally shouts obscenities at them first, and if that doesn't really work, then he'll approach them and start stabbing them in the buttocks. Now, sometimes he, you know, some of the reports say that he had like a little spike on his knee, so he'd like run up behind a woman and go, boom, you know what I mean? And as you do.
Okay.
Other cases say that he would just cut the clothing, just like Spring Heel Jack when we get into him. He cut the clothing. Some reports say that he even cut substantial wounds into people. So, you know, he was a bit of a menace.
But
his,
psycho.
His biggest trick was this nose gag. Basically, what this is like a little bunch of flowers that people used to walk around. You know, like you see them, don't you? Like at weddings, they carry like a little bunch of flowers, like the bridesmaids and shit.
Yeah.
That's basically a nose gag. And what he'd do, he'd go up to this woman that he obviously clearly fancied, and he'd say, do you want to smell my flowers? And she'd say, fuck off, you weirdo. But then he'd say, no, smell my flowers. And if she didn't, that second time, he'd jab her in the face with it, and he had like a little needle in there. So as he thrust it into the face, he stabbed her in the face with a needle. So he's a right sod. You know, that's the nice way to put it.
Yeah.
You British, you really know how to woo a woman.
That's yeah, it, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. He's not somebody like to invite to a party, Jerry. I told you, mate.
I mean, look, he asked her twice, didn't he? I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But, I mean, this went on for 2 years before they arrested someone, and I'll get into that in a minute, because I think this poor guy was made a scapegoat, but we'll get into that as we go. Again, like I say, it went on for 2 years, and there was up to 50 cases reported to the authorities at the time. But a lot of those reports went down as women just looking for sympathy or, you know, looking for attention, which you get, you know, everywhere, don't you? So
a lot
of them would say that. And they even went as far as some of the women were faking wounds, you know, just to say, and I mean, I don't know why, but anyway. So the local guys set up a club, and it was called the No Monster Club, and used to wear little pins on the lapels to prove that they weren't a monster, because obviously at the time then, it was even unsafe for guys to walk the street. Because if a lone guy was walking the street, people would think, ah, this is the, you know, this is him. So they'd start attacking him. So they used to go out in groups and looking for the monster. But obviously they had no luck. And again, you know, they had no luck in capturing him. And obviously the police at the local at the time was called the Bow Street Runners.
And they didn't have a look
in catching him. And there was actually a rewards offered for him. You got these armed men, you know, vigilante groups going around and still can't get hold of this guy until the 13th of June, 1790. So this is 2 years after it all started. Annie Porter was walking home with her admirer, John Coleman, when she noticed that there's a man following him. You know, you get that feeling, don't you? Someone's following you.
Yeah.
And he had been for a while. And just as they reached their house, this Coleman, he decided to confront this guy. So he turned round and accused him of insulting his lady, and he challenged him to a duel.
Is that, you know, kind of the old smack cheek with a white glove, is it?
Yeah, glove on the floor.
You cab. You know. Yeah.
So obviously he protested his innocence, you know, and given the, you know, the time, you know, like I say, this had been going on for a few years now and people really, you know, jumping on this. So he knew what was coming. He said, no, you know, he did admit that he had approached her. But he did say, I've got alibis for the other attacks, but no one really listened to him. So he was charged with defacing the clothing. And that, you know, just one of them curiosities that crop up from time to time. Defacing clothing actually carried a worse punishment or a harsher sentence than assault or attempted murder at the time. Okay?
It's like crap as it is, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was not good for him. So he was, you know. So he was tried and he was found guilty, and he was actually sentenced to 6. Even though he had alibis for most of the attacks. Basically, they wanted a scapegoat, and I think he was used as a scapegoat. But after he was convicted, the London Monster sort of hysteria, if you like, died down because everyone thought, well, they caught the guy.
That's it.
And so the reports died down as well. But again, you know, some of the reports still continued years after that. So obviously he's inside for 6 years and it's still going on. I mean, one of the last cases before he got put away was in 1970. And this guy was meant to approach this woman and obviously asked her for a dance. And she said, no.
So instead
of stabbing her in the nose this time, he said this. Well, he offered her a bunch of flowers. Now, this guy who was convicted was meant to have worked in a florist, so that, you know, so you getting tense. So.
Yeah.
But he actually, in this case, he offered her a bunch of flowers. She said no. So he said, blast your eyes, you damn bitch. I will murder you and drown you in your blood.
There you go.
But, you know, that's chicken and egg, isn't it? Because, like, I'm going to murder you and then drown you in your blood. So it's a bit... Bit of a, I don't know how he's going to work that out, but
he was quite the smooth talker.
Yeah,
I mean, especially with the flowers. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he must be thinking, what's wrong with these women? I'm offering him these beautiful flowers, and I don't want to know. But you know, some reports say,
if someone accepted the flowers? No.
Well, we don't hear about them ones, do we?
I'm just saying. Yeah, oh, yeah, thank you. She did, you know. Yeah. What's it? Jump on her, you know.
Whatever. I think. What happens here then, after this London Monster obviously got a bit of headline news, if you like, obviously, that, you know, there weren't many newspapers at the time, but a lot of people found out about this and it started to spread across the country. We get to 1803 and we get goes down as the Hammersmith Ghost. And again, this is like perpetuating that sort of mythos now.
It starts going a bit.
So... This starts with a number of people reporting that they'd seen, and some even said they'd been attacked by a ghost, okay? And the ghost was judged to be this guy, a local guy who had committed suicide the year previous and been buried in the Hammersmith churchyard. The problem with that is, obviously, you bury someone that's committed suicide in consecrated ground, their soul cannot rest. So this is why the people think that it was this guy. The apparition was described as being tall, pale, dressed in white. Now, some accounts said that he wore a calfskin garment, and this keeps cropping up time and time again.
Yeah, it does.
And, you know, we'll come on to that a bit later with the conclusion, I guess. But a calfskin garment, sometimes he'd have horns, and one of the most compelling features, he had large glass eyes. Mm. So, again, this crops up later on. He had big eyes. These are the glass ball, you know, big bulging glass ball.
In them days, that thing was, you know.
Yeah, so two of the women that were seized by the ghost on separate occasions while walking by this churchyard, okay, one was an elderly woman and the other was a pregnant woman, but both of them were so frightened by the experience that they died of shock a few days later.
This is what, yeah,
okay,
counts.
So, you know, he never actually killed anybody, but, you know, his actions led to consequences. Now, there was a guy called Thomas Groom, later that same year, was walking through that graveyard when he said someone grabbed him from behind a tombstone, grabbed him really tight around the neck, around the throat, and, you know, was strangling him. And he punched at him, and he said he felt like he hit something soft, almost like a, you know, again, we're getting this fair coat, or this sort of, you know, fairy, you know, soft outer skin, if you like. A friend heard the commotions and broke that up, so that's how he got away with it. Now... In that case, there was another one actually, just before we go into that. In December 29th, there was a night watchman who saw what he believed to be this ghost, gave chase, and this ghost threw off its cape, its shroud. And again, that crops up in the descriptions occasionally. He dropped this cape on the floor and he ran away. What eventually happened here is there was a guy who was basically... again, used as a scapegoat for this.
Yep.
They accidentally killed a fellow when he was on a night patrol looking for this guy. They killed this guy and he was just a local brickie or plasterer. And he was wearing all white. So when they seen him all in white, it was night time, seeing him all in white, and they obviously, you know, it's obviously a ghost.
Ooh.
So shoot it. So they shot it. Shot him and he died. Hit the blew his jaw off.
He was dead.
So he became the scapegoat for it then, and then a lot of the attacks were attributed to him because he was wandering around this, you know, why. And there was, later in his trial, I think the mother-in-law still told him not to walk around in white because she knew people were looking for a ghost. And she said, look, you'll be noticed as a ghost. So then people thought, well, he was doing it to look like a ghost, to scare people. So he had it coming type thing. So again, he was used as a scapegoat in that case.
And the officer in that case, actually the one who shot him, actually was tried for murder also.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He got away with it though, didn't he? I think that they were sentenced him to death, but because it was, basically it was the first case, wasn't it? It was a precedent for, self-defense type thing, you know, because he actually thought he was attacking a ghost, didn't he? This ghost was harming people. So he actually got his sentence commuted to, was it 12 months hard labor?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so he actually got away with it, essentially, got away with killing this guy. So again, you know, I think, again, this was, you know, the climate of fear what had built up around this time, this helped reduce that, you know, because this is the guy, and all the burden gets put on him, and it sort of dies off. And
this was the case throughout this time. That's what happened.
Yeah, and you find that in a lot of these. Yeah. I don't know if you've found this as well, but it seems like an energy builds up. It sort of manifests this creature more and more.
There's mass hysteria.
Yeah, and that sort of... that. Powers him almost, and then once you found a victim, like a scapegoat, it sort of kills the.
Well, that was my theory, which I'll tell later on about what we think he was or they was, because I think there's more than one. That's my theory.
I don't know what you want to go into next. I mean, 1808 is sort of coming up in the years now. And, just before this is just prior to Springio Jack coming on the scene, but 1808, you get this letter in the Sheffield Times, and it was the tale of the. The legend of the park ghost, and essentially we've got the same thing going on here. The people were getting pissed off with this, alleged ghost that was attacking people in one of the parks in the city centre. So, is this the same manifestation of this energy or whatever, cropping up somewhere else? But that's 1808. And then I think we get into the Spring Eel stuff now, don't we? 1837, is it?
I mean, mine is...
Should we give a description of the general look of...
Well, I'll tell you this one. This is the first documented, the first documented into the newspapers at that time. This, I think it's from the Times as well. So anyway, we'll go into this now. Right, the first documented sighting was by a young girl on her way home one evening in 1837 in Clapham. Which is in Clapham Common, which is the churchyard. You mentioned the churchyard about that guy. So, her name was Polly Adams. Miss Adams claims that a dark figure had launched over a high wall as she cut through Clapham Churchyard. Again, a churchyard, consecrated ground. So, he's hanging around these places, okay? Right, the girl reported that the figure had looked like a man, but had bared claw hands and burning, glowing eyes. The creature laid over her and groped at her body before hearing the shouts of approaching witnesses and turning to leap over another impossibly high wall to make its escape. Now, this is first, in this country, the first documented one. I think there was another one with a businessman, but I didn't get... There was this businessman who walked at night through Clapham Common, so there might have been a kind of a hot spot there.
But didn't just jump out in front of him.
Yeah, he tried to grab this Miss Adams. He tried to have a body, but this businessman, he just laid it.
Yeah, he's more interested in women, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he liked to, he liked the females, definitely. he was a female guy, definitely, but yeah, that's the first documented one on that one. So anyway, they say this again. It's these claw-like hands. I mean, are we talking, are we talking paranormal here? He had claws. Or are we talking metal claws? Gloves? That's in 1837. And I'm going to go now to... you like this one. Now, because at that time, there's... Now mass hysteria hits, It's documented, it's going for the papers now. People are now getting, to these sightings now.
Yeah.
And they're giving their accounts of what Springio Jack is.
I'll just give a general description of what Springio Jack is, because obviously this is how people were recognising him at the time. But essentially, to me, what I have in my mind is, you know, the old Batman.
Well, it was definitely a cloak.
Yeah, the original Batman, you know, with the cape.
Yeah, the cape.
Because he says, in a lot of cases, he has little pointy horns and a mask, and, you know, that is Batman, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tight-fitting clothes.
That's definitely Batman.
Generally dark in colour. Although, you know, it does vary from place to place. I know, Jerry, you had a slightly different description of him in the States.
Yeah, a little bit different. For the most part, it's the same. Sometimes in the States, they would have him with the black cloak and the skin-tight clothes underneath. And sometimes it was smoky-colored clothes that were tight-fitting with no cloak. And sometimes it was just all dressed in black. But in most cases, it was a cloak of some sort and tight clothes underneath. So it was pretty similar.
And the real, you know, the two big features of him are normally, well, three big features are sort of glowing eyes that crops up time and time again, sometimes fiery. This ability to project sort of flames from his mouth, blue flames, and then the ability to bound. Many accounts tell of him, like, literally jumping 10 feet in the air over buildings and stuff. That's essentially how he gets his name. Spring heel.
Yeah, but he was called the first started to call him Steel Jack before Spring Heel Jack because of his disguises. Sometimes this kind of armor or a steel helmet he had or a helmet he had on or his long metal claws. So the first the papers named him Steel Jack,
And then because of his bounding
away over the buildings, they changed Spring his name from Steel Jack to Spring Heel Jack.
So what's the next one then?
Right, we've done Mary Stevens. Anyway, so this is in October 1837. The next day, Spring Heel Jack was seen in Mary's neighbourhood, blah, 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 where he jumped in front of a coach, causing the coachman to lose control and meet with an accident. He then gave out a horrific shriek of laughter and made his getaway by jumping over a 9-foot-high wall. But I think these two are the famous ones, aren't they? You know, the first one, this is back in, this is 1838, 19th of February. Now, this is a lady called Jane Alsop, right? Jane Alsop, who was in her father's house on the night of the 19th of February, when there was a knock at the door, and a voice called claiming to be a policeman, asking her to come to the door. She opened it, and it says, asking her to bring a light as she caught, he had caught Spring Heel Jack in the lane. Right. She saw a cloaked figure waiting there. On handing over the candle to him, the man suddenly threw off his cloak, revealing most hideous and frightful appearance, with fiery eyes. Now, these eyes again.
Yep.
He vomited blue and white flames onto Jane's face, and then tore off her gown and inflicted bloody scratches on her neck and arms with his ice-cold metallic claws. But Jane's sister appeared and Jack fled. So that was...
I'm going to say later on in that story that a man got together to look for him, because obviously they heard the commotion, and somebody, they said maybe an accomplice, picked up his cloak.
So we're talking about accomplice, don't we?
Yeah, now, so but you get this... It crops up every now and again that there's sometimes more than one assailant, but it could just be... It could have been him coming back for his cloak for all we know.
Anyway, again on 28th of February, Lucy Scales, she was 18, was returning with her sister from her brother's house in Limehouse. As they were passing the Green Dragon Alley, Lucy came across a man in a large cloak who unexpectedly spitted out some blue flame onto her face, disabling her sight and triggering violent fits which continued for hours. All the while, The Times, a British daily newspaper, helped spread the legend by reporting the instance. So by then it had gone viral, hadn't it?
Yeah, I think it was this time when they accused that Marquess of
the Marquis,
him, didn't he? Of Waterford.
Yeah,
but later on it turned out that he pretty much had alibis for. And the reason they accused him is because
all the royals have alibis. Oh yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. But he was first put in the frame because he was known prankster, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was
always liked to joke
and shit.
Liked to joke,
and he had a high pitched laugh, didn't he? He had one.
Something like the Joker.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, Batman's running through this.
But, I mean, even if he was guilty, he wouldn't have got convicted anyway.
No, but he did later on move to Ireland, and obviously the sightings and the attacks continued to happen, so you know it couldn't have been him. But
there's the Jane Alsop and the Lucy Scales were, I think, really the most.
So that's 1838. And again, it sort of spreads around the country at that point. You end up, you get reports in, you've got reports in Liverpool.
Yeah, in Everton, Cornwall, Liverpool.
Southampton.
And that's in 1888.
Northamptonshire.
Yeah.
So again, this is this idea that you're almost conjuring him up like a tulpin,
Yeah.
Like the people thinking about him and getting these stories about him almost bring it to life.
Like I said, in 1845, he was reported throwing a prostitute to her death from a bridge. This was in broad daylight.
Mm.
So, was it him? Or was it maybe it could be a feud, somebody arguing, I killed my missus, I'll blame my spring heel jack.
I mean, she was a 13-year-old prostitute, wasn't she? So.
Yeah, well.
But the reports in that one say that she was, the person that saw her in the way had a cloak and all that shit, so this is why he bounded away as well. Didn't he jump over a butcher's shop as well? And that was that case, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, leaped over a butcher's shop. So, I mean, he's not your general villain, is he?
We could go into more. There's loads of more minor ones, but basically the guy was a pervert. You know, he loved women, and he wanted a bit of, touchy-feely and...
If he loved guys, he would be high-heeled Jack instead of spring-heeled Jack.
Yeah.
It is important to go back a little bit after the Jane Alsop incident. The police actually arrested somebody, a guy named Thomas Milbank, because they said that he had dropped a coat and some other stuff along with the candles and stuff like that. Ooh. And he was bragging at a bar that he had actually assaulted her. But then he was ended up being released because Jane Alsop said he did not fit the description. He didn't have the physique of the guy that attacked her, and he just didn't fit. And then this guy obviously couldn't blow blue flames out of his mouth. No. So
she did say that he had bulging eyes, didn't that? Mm. That was one of the things.
This is where Mike comes to an accomplice.
Yeah. And that guy they arrested didn't have those eyes. So she said, that's not the guy. But again, a lot of people theorize that she'd made this case so supernatural and all that, aspects of it, that when she actually was confronted with a guy who did it, she didn't want to let on that it was him because she didn't want to look like a cunt, So,
but it's interesting also on that story. I've heard that story two different ways. I've heard that story that they come tell her, knock on the door, say it's the police, they need some light, and then it's him all along. But then I've also heard the story that it was somebody comes and says that to her, takes her to the alley.
The alley, yeah.
And there's
bodies lying there.
Yeah, Spring Hill Jack is already there. So there was actually two people in the story, and then sometimes it's just Spring Hill Jack himself. So it's interesting to try to figure out which one of those stories is actually more accurate.
There was a case in Turner Street, which was in February the 25th, 1838, where he actually supposedly knocked on the door and asked for somebody, the master of the house, and a servant boy. Of course, this entity who approached the door took off his hat, and he was a hideous face and all that, So he's maybe not. If it was Spring Hill Jack, he's not bothered about knocking on the door.
Mm. But he was obviously looking for a lady.
So he knew if it was him, he was asking for the master of the house, so he actually knew the person in the house. So he wasn't looking for a lady; he was looking for a man.
The funny thing about Spring Hill Jack, and this ties into the London monster you were talking earlier. Mm. Think about this correlation: when you hear the description of Spring Hill Jack, a lot of times it's a devilish type, elongated face, sometimes horned, sometimes not, pointy ears, horrendous looking.
Yeah.
Now you go back to the London monster. This guy must have been horrendous looking too, because back in this day, if he's got beautiful flowers and he's asking girls to smell it and they're turning him down, this guy must have been tore up.
Oh yeah.
So you know, there could be a connection to whether he could have been the London Monster. Well, because obviously both of these guys were hideous, but for women not to pay them any, never mind.
Yeah, he must be the first guy to say it with flowers, maybe. I don't know. I don't mind, so.
Should have tried milk tray.
Yeah, milk tray, yeah. Yeah.
Or a packet.
He could have jumped to the buildings anyway. He could have left a box of chocolates
on
the bed.
All you need round here is a kebab and a packet of condoms.
Yeah. Our time's changed.
So we get over, I think, you know, we see him cropping up all over the world then. We see him cropping up in Chile. He's called the Widower, I think, up out there. Or the Widow, can't remember now. But he crops up there, same again. He's bounding all over the place, frightening people and then running away. It's like he's almost feeding on fear.
Yeah.
And then we see him crop up in Prague in the 1940s. But he was more of a resistance fighter there, he was good, Spring Hill Jack there, because he was giving people hope of a better future and all that. And he, you know, obviously with a senior supernatural character bounding around and all that, they thought, well, fucking hell, we're not going to lose this now. You know, we've got this guy on our side.
I think he was it wasn't the original one. I think it was different.
Well, we see this, manifesting all over the world. And then obviously he manifests in America. So you want to go into that, Jerry?
Yeah, actually, it's oddly enough, I didn't know this until we started researching, but the very first sighting in the U.S. of a Spring Hill Jack type of character was actually right here where I live in the state of Kentucky. Happened in 1880. And what they said, it was just like most of these, there's just not a lot of details to it, but same thing, jumped out in front of a young lady. She described him as being very tall, 7-8 feet tall. Said he had long, icy cold metal fingers. And he shot blue flames, not from his mouth, but from his chest.
Hmm.
Other than that, everything matches up almost exactly to what was happening over in England at the time. He then, there's stories that are similar, but not quite the same. Hmm. Going back to 1985 in Lawrence, New York, there was a church that supposedly at 10 o'clock, everybody would gather. Almost every night except for Sunday, didn't show up on Sundays, but at 10 o'clock he would just bounce all around, even jumping as high as the steeple of the church and sometimes ringing the church bell, and then just disappear after midnight. Same thing in Long Island, New York in 85, except this time it occurred at the Centerville race course. They said it was somewhere between 11 o'clock. He would show up, disappeared about 12. And he would just run around this race course. They said he would zigzag. He would spit and fire out of his mouth, didn't mention the color. But then they said he always left the smell of sulfur behind.
Ooh.
And that he moved like a feather in the wind and would zigzag. 1989, there was a sighting in Wading River, which is also in Long Island, New York. This was interesting because they said he would show up at 11:55 in a churchyard graveyard. He would just bounce around and try to read the tombstones like he was trying to see where he belonged. He would perch on a tombstone at 12, so this only lasted for 5 minutes, and then he would let go 12 fiery lightning bolts from his eyes.
All right.
And then probably the two most famous, 1909 in Georgetown, Delaware, the people called him the Devil in Black. So there was a character 7 foot tall. He had a black cloak.
Mm-hmm.
He would jump behind trees and scare young ladies. He chased one young lady to where she fainted in front of a grocery store. Another gentleman saw him a little later that night. So there was three different people on the same night. And then probably the most famous case of this is Cape Cod, 1939.
Yeah.
This guy showed up. He was known as the Black Flash there, but they said he would jump over buildings in a single bound. He was super fast. He could levitate. He would disappear and reappear in other places at the same time. So, like I said, not a ton of detail, but there are plenty of sightings going on. I did show, and this is actually back over in your neck of the woods, but in 1986, there was a British Army officer that said he saw a guy jumping over hedges, and then the guy approached him and punched him in the face and knocked him out. And when he woke up, the guy said, "Hey, you were knocked out by Spring Hill Jack." That's what used to go on here in the 17th century. Yeah. So, cool yeah, story.
There was another account of that one where he attacked Sentry.
That was in
1870, was it?
Yeah, 1878.
Yeah.
In Aldershot, wasn't it? An army camp. He was one of the security guards. He saw this security guard at night again. He saw this figure come towards him. Of course, the guy, you know, the security guard, halt, who goes there, you know. He just kept on coming. He came up to this the security guard and just started slapping his face, you know. And he said, poof, he's gone. Just bounded off.
He approached him, didn't he, from the darkness? And
he just kept coming, said, you know, halt, who goes there?
And then he went back into the darkness, didn't he, back into the shadows. So the guy stood there for a few minutes thinking, well, he must have gone by now. Turned around and he was behind him, wasn't he? He stood in his sentry box. And then he slapped
him, basically just gave him a few slaps.
I know the army set traps for him in 1870. After that, that case, there was another case where he got another slapped another sentry in 1870, and that... they set traps for him that night, but they said that every time he come, he just sprang away and jumped onto the roof of the sentry box, so they could never catch him. 1870 again, he appears in Lincoln, which is obviously a few hours away from London. Most of this is happening around Kensington, sort of place, you know, in London, which was, you know, small villages and that at the time. But he appears in Lincoln, 1870. Reportedly he was shot at in the street, didn't seem to have any effect of him, he just laughed at him and bounded away, leaping over fences and even small buildings. So again, you know, it comes back to this supernatural thing. I think it was 1904, he appears in Everton, leaping over Everton in Liverpool, obviously, bounded over up and over streets and again jumping onto rooftops.
Which is, I think that time he was jumping over the church, wasn't he?
Yeah,
the church tower. So
he just crops up in the most unusual places for, you know, for no amount of time. He's just there and then he's gone. He scares a few people and off he goes. So,
well, he doesn't like men. He gave the men a few punches or a few slaps, but the women, he loved the women, you know. But my theory on that is, I think he's a psychic vampire. But as we know, I'm not saying all, but you know, the women, you know, sometimes they get really frightened. They can give off more fear as a man. You know, we get frightened as well, but I think he can get more energy from a woman being frightened and, you know, feed on her more than a man, you know, but. That's one of my theories. So
it does seem to be that way. I mean, do you get that, Jerry? Do you get the impression that this is because I mean I'm sort of leaning more supernatural. I mean, I know it's not usually me saying this, but I'm leaning more supernatural on some of these accounts. I mean, do you get the supernatural, or do you get this is just a pervert?
I think it's a combination of things. I think some of the stories definitely lean more towards the supernatural. But then how much of it is hysteria built in with, I guess you could say, embellishing the truth a little bit? You know, there's people out there in athletics that can jump pretty high that would probably be pretty amazing to see inside, you know, right there directly in front of you. You mix in a little bit of fear. And some of that, does that all of a sudden, you know, turn into jumping on top of a building when in reality they jumped 4 foot, not 8 feet? But, you know, you've seen before where people see somebody and they're like, oh my God, they must have been 6'5" and 300 pounds. And in reality, they were 6 foot, you know, 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. But that fear makes you over embellish. There's so many of these sightings all over the world that I almost think there's got to be some kind of a supernatural answer. Is it some type of alien? Is it a time traveler? Who knows? But I lean more towards that. But there's also some of these cases were probably impersonators. They were probably just somebody trying to jump on the bandwagon. We see these copycat things all the time. But I do believe...
Go on, I was just going to say that happened in the London Monster case. The actual pickpockets and that at the time used the London Monster as a getaway almost. What they'd do, they'd pickpockets of people and then shout, "It's the London Monster!" And people had come running over and started battering him while they run, they run away, you know, with his money and that, you know what I mean? So you got the team got double whammy. But yeah, they used that to an advantage, yeah, obviously. Yeah. So yeah, carry on.
Yeah, but I just don't. I think there's too many sightings all over the world at the same time where communication wasn't that good back then. It's not like the internet. So you've got something happening in 1830 or 40 or 50 somewhere in London. That news isn't just going to spread to, you know, Prague that quick or to the U.S. I mean, obviously, you can still get the message across these areas. But I just find it hard to believe that there are so many sightings of similar. And I mean, it goes with a lot of these different, however you want to term them, as cryptids or monsters or what have you. I mean, the Mothman situation, I mean, there were sightings of that all over the world. You know, at roughly the same time. And I mean, you can maybe lump all these into the same type, but you know, the descriptions, when you get into the claws, whether it be real claws or metal fingers or any of that stuff, it all sounds more supernatural to me than, you know, these were superheroes before there were superheroes, the reality of. Spring-Heeled Jack may very well be what every superhero is based off of.
Yeah, I blame the papers as well because I think they caused that.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the papers sold. We can Jack was he's a winner, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. You know? But do you get this, I mean, obviously Tolpas is the same thing, this manifestation, you know, where people put that much energy and concentration and fear into something that it manifests.
Yeah, of course it does.
You know, you get this in all sorts of cases, don't you, where people get that scared or something, that it actually happens, you know, or manifests itself. So,
without doubt. I mean, just like with the story that we're doing this week is on the Salem witch trials, and that's a perfect example of when fear basically gets out of hand and causes a panic, and something's got to, you know, something's got to give at that point.
I mean, that's where I lean towards. I mean, yeah, you come onto the papers, and the papers obviously make things worse because we have, you know, obviously, you know,
we've got to sell the papers.
We've got, obviously later on we get Jack the Ripper, don't we? So we get, so we've got Spring-Heeled Jack, we've got Jack the Ripper, and then we get, I think it's the 1970s, we get Jack the Snipper.
Yeah.
And again, this is the papers, but essentially this guy, although there was another Jack the Snipper, but I'll talk about, but essentially, this Snipper idea, you know, we got Jack the Ripper, then we get Jack the Snipper. I think the first one started it in 1911. And it said, basically, after several reported attacks in Middlesex and Kent, an Enfield resident who was a typist at the London Constitutional Club was approaching the clubhouse one morning when she was grabbed by an unknown assailant. Her hair was cut. Okay. So I don't know what you thought. I don't know what you thought I was snipping, but it was only hair, right?
Snipping right? Some. I don't know what he's doing.
He snipped her hair.
Could be a hairdresser. Right?
Two other similar incidents took place. But on the third occasion, the perpetrator was caught and harangued in a mason house. So basically, they got him, took him to the you know, where the judges wasn't.
There. Yeah, courthouse.
They had cells there, didn't they? Yeah, courthouse, what you call it, courthouse. Yeah. In most cases, the victims, usually women, fall foul to this such vicious and weird predation. The hair is very rarely found, suggesting that the kinky snipper likes to collect the hair trophies. So this happened in...
What did he do with the hair?
Yeah, this happened, this crops up again, I think, in late 90s, I think it was. I might be wrong on that. But in the University of Hampshire, New Hampshire. That's obviously in the States, I think. And again, this guy was going into women's dorms at night and cutting their hair off. And the first thing they know about is when they woke up in the morning, their hair was missing. you get this kind of shit. But then we move on to Jack the Snipper. So again, you know, he crops back up in the 1970s. So you've got this. You've got the Phantom Skirt Slasher of Piccadilly held reign for 6 months. Again, you know, it's just this little time period. Actually, it's 1960s. This. So Piccadilly held reign for 6 months in the 1960s. A teasing menace who loitered behind women on escalators and cut fabric from their skirts to reveal their buttocks.
Ooh,
very nice. Yeah.
That's better taken here, isn't it? Really? Yeah. You get a better view.
And then he pops up again in 1977. The pest or possibly a similar person, struck again, and obviously at this point he'd become known as Jack the Snipper, he would flee into the depths of the London Underground after his attacks. The Skate Ripper was never wounded his victims. In fact, most were unaware they'd even been a victim. I mean, obviously, he'd be walking down the street and people would be sniggering at him.
Sitting your ass going, bug bag.
But mostly, they was unaware. In 1977, the Phantom was caught and turned out to be a 23-year-old school care officer, Graham Carter, who'd even kept a diary of his exploits. I guess nowadays he'd have a picture of it as well, wouldn't he? Like a selfie.
Yeah.
He was ordered to pay £270 for his crimes. So yeah, so it is my theory that we're gonna, you know, with the way the papers go, I think we're gonna end up with another Jack the something, and I think it's gonna be, well, I'll tell you his name in a minute, but essentially, what's going on. And again, you know, Jack the Snipper, really, his playground was the London Underground. And at the moment on the London Underground, and I'm surprised the papers haven't gone with this yet, but we've got a real problem with, you know, voyeurism and all this kind of thing. Like,
sickos.
Yeah, perverts, basically.
Yeah.
But because people are crammed on tube trains like sardines,
like cattle,
we're getting a lot of cases where women are reporting now where they're getting off trains and they basically had some guys cock pressed against them,
and again, this, you know, is not. This doesn't happen by chance, does it? Like,
well, you know, I mean, some of the women said, "Well, the thought it was
unless
just
a big, fat, ugly one, and obviously you'll keep away." Like, you know,
some of them thought, "Well, maybe it's just a case that, you know, we're too close."
Yeah,
together
too close. Yeah, yeah.
But then obviously when they walked away and they felt the wet patch, and they thought, "Oh no, this isn't." So yeah, I'm waiting for the papers.
Obviously, he had it out then. He wasn't.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's cases of that where people have been sat on the train and reading a book and they thought the guy in front of them was snoring because he's making all these groaning noises. And they finished that chapter, looked up, and he had his cock out. So you get all these fucking perverts. But yeah, I think we're going to end up with another Jack. We're going to get Jack the Dripper.
Jack
the Dripper on the London train. So yeah. So look out for that one because that's coming to papers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Soon.
Yeah.
But
I think it's happening now, that stuff. So,
you know. But yeah, so perverts, you know, it just seems like, I mean, it could be that we're just talking about a pervert, you know, from every generation. Obviously, you're going to get one, aren't you? I mean, we used to have one round here. We used to have a lollipop man was a fucking knicker sniffer.
Yeah.
Yeah, your mum or whatever put her knickers on the line and then you go out to get them and they'd be gone. And this lollipop man around the corner was stealing them all. And when they raided his house, he had like fucking wardrobes full of knickers. But,
whatever rocks his boat, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know?
But he was a lollipop man, so they wouldn't have given him Jack the lollipop man, would they? Called him somewhere. But anyway, yeah.
That could have been Jack the Sucker.
Yeah. Well, definitely.
But he was just a pervert. But you get perverts, don't you? So we could be talking about a pervert. Or,
so are we talking about a perverted psychic vampire?
I think we're looking at...
Because he's getting off on the energy of people getting frightened. He's definitely getting off on it. Feeding off that fear energy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't believe... I think he's got these glowing eyes, yeah, because I think he, you know, but this...
These dark shadowy beings with fiery eyes keep cropping up even nowadays. You know, you get Shadow Man cases, don't you?
Absolutely, but
Dogman sightings.
It could be just a perverted Dracula, you know. I don't know.
You know, so we could be talking about one of the same, but I don't know. I think
Definitely paranormal. I think it's definitely paranormal.
I'm leaning more supernatural.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm saying
probably like you said, he's feeding on the fairies.
Yeah, that, sort of especially with women, because that's why he targeted women more. Than men. All right, it's also men gave him a few slaps or punched him, whatever. He wasn't interested. It was the women he was interested in.
Yeah,
you know. So
on conclusion, then what do you reckon, Jerry?
Oh, I think it's got to be for the most part supernatural.
Yeah. Mm.
Supernatural. And I also think that. I think that you guys somehow, some way, in every show find a way to put in dogman sightings.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I
try to sneak in.
Everything's a dogman, you know?
If in doubt, it's a dogman. You know what I mean? If you've got something that's unexplained, well, it's probably Dogman, isn't it?
Not all the time. Dogman's not all the time.
It's like my missus. My missus said, hey, where's that other half of pizza gone that I left in the fridge for work?
Dogman.
Dogman. Oh, Bigfoot. Told you. fucking yeah. So, well, that's Spring Heel Jack then.
Yeah, I think it's, I think mostly the papers was to blame because obviously it built up their papers, sold money. He was a big celebrity, you know. Obviously, but definitely paranormal, definitely a psychic vampire. That's it. And I think once the hysteria
dies down,
you don't. So does he?
Reports. But I mean, I guess the most recent report. I guess before we go, we may as well just comment on this. I mean, there was two. There was. 2012, there was a family driving, I think there was driving around Tame, was it?
Oxford, yeah, Tame, yeah.
And they spotted a dark figure in the road, which when they approached it, they thought, you know, some roadkill or something. And then it stood up and bounded across, they see it bound across a field, that's the way they say it. And again, you know, probably a dog man. But
there you go. Yeah. Well, again, you see. Yeah. Bounded away, you know.
But anyway, yeah, so they said, so obviously they said, well, it must be Spring Heel Jack, because obviously, you know, where else could it be? So, and then again, later that same year, there was a couple driving along, and they saw a light, approached this light, and this is in the, you know, middle of nowhere, pitch black at night, and they're driving along, see this light, and they think at first it's a warning light, you know, like someone's broke down or a hazard, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So they slow down with that, this light and this figure stand up, and again it bounds away from the scene. So, and you know, we get this light with Spring Heel Jack, and obviously they thought, well, it must be Spring Heel Jack, because again, what
I mean,
else could
is this? I mean, I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, I've heard people say it, I've done a bit of research into it, I'm not sure about it. But this is where they get the Jack in the Box from. You know, you think it ding, 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 and then it pops out. Yeah. You know, they say that is from actually the legend of Spring Heel Jack. That's where it came from. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but, you know. So it's, definitely paranormal. Definitely paranormal. But I think there was a lot of people after that impersonating him, trying to, you know.
Yeah, I think a guy called John Matthews wrote a book. On Spring Heel Jack, and I think he mentioned that
that's where Jack in the Box came from.
But Spring Heel Jack. So thank you very much, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Oh, thank you guys for having me on. We appreciate it. We'll have to get you back on our show again sometime soon.
I look forward to that.
Sure, we can talk about Dog Man.
I think Dog Man's been done today.
Bigfoot. We've got to do something else. Mothman? Mothman? I don't know.
Mothman's just Spring Heel Jack, isn't it?
Well, kind of.
More or less, it kind of is with wings. I mean, but, you know, Mothman, when you start looking into it, it really is similar to the Spring Heel Jack sightings. Yeah. I mean, because they're literally are virtually the same type of sightings all over the world of the same type of creature. So.
Absolutely.
They're all related. They're all related, and somehow related to the dog man.
Probably. Maybe it's a shapeshifter. Well, actually, I was going to touch on that, because a lot of these cases, these Spring Heel Jack, I mean, I don't know how much you give credence to the theory of the skinwalkers. You'd probably be quite familiar with them.
Yeah.
But a lot of these cases, you get people reporting, I mean, there was a case in Cornwall where the guy was tried as Spring Heel Jack, and he was reportedly running around in an ox skin. The London Monster, people said he was wearing a calf skin.
So then what they do, they put this on, and then they impersonate that animal or that creature?
Well, there was another guy who was caught, and he was wearing a bear skin. So this gives the illusion of these horns on top. What we're actually looking at is ear horns. But, and obviously, the Native Americans are big on this skinwalker, where you put this, and then we get this with the Luguru as well, the dog man. But we
werewolf. Let's call it werewolf.
Yeah, werewolf. Where you put,
change it. Werewolf.
you put the skin on, and then basically you get the attributes of the animal. I mean, that crops up time and time again. And obviously, we don't really have that.
It's a ritual, really. Yeah, it's a ritual, isn't it?
In the UK. So, I mean, that was not picked up on in these reports because to them it was just a guy running around in a fucking bear skin. I mean,
actually thinks he's a bear.
They didn't go down that angle because it wasn't really common here. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Jerry, before we go?
I don't know. I, I've never been one to really buy too much into shapeshifters, skinwalkers, or any of that. I'm not saying that I don't believe, but it's something I've really not been fascinated by, so I've not done a lot of research with. So I would tend towards probably no, but then that makes no sense whatsoever for me to believe half of what I really believe. So I don't know. Right. It's kind of hard to explain because, like I said, I'm sitting here talking about I believe in Spring Hill Jack, but I don't believe in that, and it's kind of hard to say you believe in one without believing in the other, but
yeah,
you know, it's all part of the supernatural.
Yeah, so thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Andy, Lee, till next time.
Definitely.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed the show. Just before we go, I just wanted to remind people that we're looking for intros and stories. If you want to send the story or if you want to get in touch with us so you can do it over Skype, then it's dbtopodcast@gmail.com. All the information about the Patreon and the t-shirts is on the website, which is www.don'tbreaktheoathpodcast.com, and that really does help us out tremendously. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. We've got some good shows coming up, so stay tuned. Thanks.